CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody.
Now, testing, testing, 1, 2, 3, testing, testing.
You guys can hear me right, huh? Just got to check on this every now and then. Make sure everything's working. It's Monday morning. Ooh, weird weather this weekend. I mean, I hate starting with the weather, but like it was yesterday, it was raining, then it was sunny, then it was raining, then it was sunny, then it rained and it was sunny at the same time. I think like if there's ever going to be an apocalypse, that's the kind of weather that's going to come before it.
It's called a monkey's wedding.
Yes. Yes.
Which is ironic, considering there was a baboon on the loose in Johannesburg yesterday.
A baboon?
Oh, right.
A bau? Bau!
That's the noise they make, right?
Bau!
Yes.
Oh.
Bau!
I'm quite excited. I'm going to... the whole family, we're going in June on another little game reserve thing. And because I enjoyed it so much in November, I'm actually really excited about it, even though it's, you know, some way away. I had to book it like months in advance.
June's a good time to go because of it being winter and the shrubbery is thinner.
Yeah, you can see more things.
Isn't that a quote that you'll find on the back of a sugar sachet? Happiness is having something to look forward to.
A short shrubbery. Yes. No, that's true. That's true. They do say you have to have something to look forward to. Hey, listen, I saw an incredible thing over the weekend, and it made me think again about the way we live for Fridays and the way we live for weekends. And it's this dude on Instagram that I follow, and he's like, he really can't understand why people live for those 2 days where they feel that they can be free when you can feel that way about every day, including Mondays. He said it's sad to him that everybody is, even though this pandemic has changed the way that we live, and, you know, the days feel like each other, even if they are weekends or weekdays. I mean,
Sia,
you know, and Leanne, you also work on weekends, so it's not like, you know, it's like weekends are particularly free of something that you do during the week or vice versa. And this guy is just saying, like, you know, you spend the weekdays working, and then over the weekend you might think about work a little bit, but you don't consider it work just because it's the weekend. It's this ridiculous industrial era, industrial revolution thinking that has got people obsessed with the weekend. And actually, we shouldn't think that way, which I suppose is a good way of going about things.
It's sad, but I know a lot of people who live and who think like that, who live for days off, who live for long weekends, right, who live for retirement or, you know, that breath of a month if they're between jobs.
Yeah.
Granted, it probably was a little too much liquor in the system, but I'll never forget a friend of mine who had a bit of a meltdown.
Uh-oh.
There's this song that came out, I'll say easily 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a South African DJ. And it's like, if you actually pay attention to the lyrics, you're like, oh, these are actually really cool lyrics. But there's a phrase there in the song that says, "We live for the weekends." And she goes, "Did you hear that? We live for the weekends when some of us are just stuck." And I'm like, you are not, ma'am, about to break down in tears in the middle of a good time.
So it affected her that badly during the song? Wow. Okay.
In
wild.
Public.
That is wild.
Okay. Really sad.
Jesus, no. I mean, like, listen, I love my weekends. I always have, because it means for me that the only really cool difference between weekends and weekdays is that I don't have to wake up early, except that on Saturday morning, I had to wake up at 5:45 because I had to go and babysit my nephew.
Oh, not early.
I know. So my sister-in-law said to me, "Please, can you come and look after the youngest one, because the oldest one has to go and play cricket." And she was on her own because my brother was away for the weekend. So I was like, I was thinking about, should I come up with some excuse, or should I just man up and do this? So I was like, you know what? I'm probably, because I had something on Friday night, I'm probably going to get to bed quite late. But bugger it, I'm going to do this. So I said, sure, I'll be there. Oh, man. Mm. You know, when you do look forward to sleeping in on a Saturday, which I really do, waking up, it just does feel like a punishment. So I got my shit together and I went over to their place. And she and the eldest kid on the way to cricket, and they're all excited and full of energy. And I suddenly thought, you know, I have such a respect for parents who have to do this every weekend you know, sport for the kids or whatever. And then I sat in their TV room and I was kind of just chilling there and waiting. And then I sort of lay down on the sofa and I was thinking, oh, I could maybe go to sleep, but I should really be awake in case the younger one wakes up, because that was the purpose for me being there, right? And he only walked in after like three quarters of an hour or in fact an hour and a half. So he was only awake for the last 15 minutes of my babysitting. So I really didn't have much of a job. It was pathetic.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it turned out to be really easy work, you know.
Yeah.
The funny thing is I was already formulating an answer, then I realized I am not the expert on childcare or children in general. But I was thinking, oh, he's at that age, plonk him in front of the TV.
Yeah.
Oh, no, listen. Give him a snack or two, and he can sort himself out.
No, well, that was it. He was totally chilled. And then by the time that he had kind of rubbed his eyes and woken up properly, his mom and his brother were back. So I didn't really have much of a job. But it was quite
delightful.
Cool. Yeah, no, it's cool. And I just... The scary thing is, like, what if he had woken up straight away and I had to entertain him for like an hour and a half, 2 hours? Then it would have been difficult.
So obviously with Joey gone, my parents don't have a dog grandchild anymore. But the timing's good because my brother's looking at getting a little dog, adopting this beautiful Jack Russell Foxy cross.
Oh, nice.
And so we were showing my dad the pictures because this will be the week that they come and inspect and do all of that.
Yeah.
And he went, oh, another dog. Because we, you know, he said to my brother, what are you going to do when you go away?
Yeah.
And we were like, Dad, we'll sort it out. We're almost 40 or 40 something. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
And my brother said, I could even bring her here. And his face kind of froze. And I said, Dad, you do realize that you have no human grandchildren.
Right.
If I had four kids and Mark had four kids and the two of us decided to go away with our kids, you'd be sitting with eight kids in your house.
Exactly.
You would have to feed them, take them to McDonald's, console them while they're crying, change nappies, put them to sleep. All of that. And he was like, okay, no, you're completely right.
Well, on that note, I saw a really cute story over the weekend. Apparently, while Prince Philip was in hospital, the Queen actually adopted two corgi puppies. They were rescues. And her thinking, because she said she wasn't going to have any more puppies because she's so old. And it would be unfair on whoever had to inherit the puppies. But she apparently spoke to her kids and her grandkids, and she said, listen, I'm not going to be wandering around Windsor Castle on my own, only talking to the servants, so I'm going to get two puppies. So she did. She got two little corgis, and they were running around with her. And she's like, what, in her mid-90s?
Yeah, easily.
I reckon.
As long as they go well and better than Major at the White House.
Shame.
Shame.
That's Joe Biden's dog that was sent home, right?
Yeah.
He bit
behavioral issues.
He bit one of the Secret Service agents or one of the White House staff.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm very protective.
It won't be long before Joe Biden starts biting the staff. He's so deranged. He gave this press conference the other day. I wonder if I can find a clip of that because, oh my God, is it bad? He basically. Really? Oh, please watch it. I'm not going to find it now because it's. I'm going to be so distracted.
Watch. It's too uncomfortable.
It really is. You know, here's the sad thing is if that was your grandfather, you'd say to him, listen, Granddad, please just don't do any interviews anymore. Or don't go on TV because it's horrible to see a person in decline. It's horrible to see someone who's not in charge of their mental faculties anymore, who doesn't really, there's nothing he can do about it. Like He can't act. He can't pretend. He can't even follow a script at this stage. It's very hard for him to appear like he's totally in control of his mouth or his brain. He wanders off. He'll start talking. He said, "Now let me tell you something. It's going to sound outrageous." And everybody's like, "Okay, whoa, this is going to be a good thing he says now." And then he goes, I can make things happen in the Senate, you know. And if you got something that's really near and dear to you, and you hold things close, and he goes, "Anyway."
Oh dear.
"Anyway, we're going to do a lot of things. We're going to get a lot of things done." And you know, you get that awkward, you get that funny feeling, and then you feel sorry for this dude because he's a very old man. I was thinking about the fact that, you know, you can't run for president in America unless you're 35 years or older. So there's a lower limit. There should be an upper limit. There should be an upper limit of, like, maybe it should be 75, maybe it should be 70, who knows. But you can't have some 90-year-old running the United States of America and making the commander-in-chief's decisions. I mean, he has to have, even if he's got a really good team around him, and I don't know whether Biden does or doesn't, he's got to have someone around him who can help make the call about whether or not this guy should be in charge. When he can't even deliver he can't answer any questions, by the way. I mean, you remember how Trump used to get off? Trump used to get off the helicopter.
Would this have been his first press conference as president?
At 60,
and that's how he sounded.
That's right. 64 days into his presidency, he gives his first press conference. Now, Trump used to get off the plane or off the helicopter, and he'd stand in front of a hostile media for 20 minutes and answer any question. Right? He was prepared for any question. Didn't have notes, none of that stuff, and he would answer questions. And the media weren't exactly Trump fans. None of them were. So now you contrast that with old Joe, who has to prepare. I mean, he had notes with like pictures. He had like photographs of all the different reporters and like what and a whole bunch of really, you know, easy to read little cards in big font. And you're like, really? There's a huge difference between these two men. And the one was what, like 5 or 6 years younger or whatever. But it makes a difference. And I'm not saying all 78-year-olds are the same. But this guy's not, he's not in any position to be running things. I'm sorry. Very, very sad to see. So it won't be long before he bites a security guard or something. Watch. It's going to go horribly wrong.
Why am I picturing, just out of fun, Vice President Harris sits at home after a tough work day? She sits in her armchair, humming "A Change Is Gonna Come."
Oh yeah.
And she's busy, like, she's sewing on, or she's sewing on her own initials on the towels,
right,
as president. Yeah. She's sewing like President Harris on the new
For
towels.
Sure.
And
yes,
then she's
definitely
putting on new seat covers that say President Harris.
And her niece
is busy graphic designing President Harris seals that will go onto new doors and stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And she's laughing about, like, migrant children at the border. Ha, ha, ha. Kamala Harris just thinks everything's hilarious. Every time they ask her about anything serious, she just starts laughing. But I do think there's something really, really wrong there. And somebody, you know, someone has to take responsibility for this, because you can't just pretend everything's okay. It's really not. All you have to do is watch. You'll see what we mean. Amir says, "Is this Fox News?" No, Amir. I mean, like, how can you think that is a biased comment? We haven't said anything mean about Joe. We're just being honest about this old man who doesn't know what the hell's going on. Trump and his admin had trouble giving a straight answer to anything. The amount of bullshit that came out of that man's mouth, says Tracy. Tracy, he could answer questions.
Yeah, or he would just tell everyone to shut up.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, that's not wrong. But at least he could face the media, you know. This guy can't. This guy's just, he's a disaster. Anyway, morning, everybody. And I got lots of good mornings here from Hugo and Jesse and Charles and Annette. And, you know, you just got to let people know that we get your messages. So thank you for those. You can get hold of us on 0797482090. There's lots of things to talk about today. I've got a range of them here, but I'm going to probably go to KZN this weekend for the Easter weekend, which I'm looking forward to. Except...
Fun.
Yeah, except I looked at the weather report, and I've circled like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and it's all rain, which is kind of annoying. Dude. Yeah, that's really shitty, right?
Isn't it so disappointing?
Well, I hope the weather report's wrong, because I really wanted to just go down to the beach for a day, you know? Just because I'm not one of those people who goes to the beach and then sits on the beach. I want to get into the water. And if it's raining, it's never really nice.
Yes.
You know, I like to get in there. That's why I like KZN over the Cape in terms of the coast. All right.
It was so icky when I was there as well. I think we only had a few hours of great sunshine.
That's right.
But even with those few hours, it was still a little windy. So, not the best situation at all. Oh, but can I tell you a bit of an awkward incident that I had this weekend?
Of course.
Well, it wasn't actually this weekend, now that I think, but I think it was Friday night, yeah. I went out for dinner with my cousin.
Yes.
And we were sit. Our table was next to this bar at the restaurant.
Okay.
And there was a guy standing at the bar, and, you know, we're very sociable people. Mm-hmm. So he's talking to us, and then, you know, a conversation starts going. And you get to figure out that, someone is trying to flirt with you. Uh-huh. So I thought, this is happening. Oh, sure, sir. And
he's trying to flirt with you.
Flirting with me, where I grew up, and what do I do? And so we're having all of those conversations. Then he throws in, you know, he was fluent in my favorite language of all, what? Which is compliments. Oh. So he was throwing that my way. So, so this is fantastic. And it goes on and on and on for a while. And then he says, oh, excuse me, a phone call comes in.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and he takes it very hush hush in the corner. And for me, it's always a bit weird. It's like, I don't know. I'm not bothered by it. Maybe you guys are. Rather, I am bothered by it. If someone takes a call in the corner, like we were having a conversation, you just excuse yourself. Clearly, then you have something to hide. But then he says, oh, sorry, I actually have to go outside. And then he leaves. And after a few minutes, he comes back with a woman.
Oh.
And as he comes back, he says very emphatically to me, he says, hi, this is my wife.
Oh.
So and so.
Oh.
She is my wife.
Oh.
And he says it like twice again to reiterate very forcefully. She goes, yeah, my wife is joining us now. I thought,
oh, shit. So,
am I in the middle of a scandal?
See ya. Look at you. So basically, this dude was flirting with you. And he was making moves.
And he's married.
Ooh. Mm.
Now, did I not end up taking a particular liking to the wife? And she's like, oh, my gosh, when you're back in Durban, we need to hang out. I'm like, girl, you don't want to hang out with me if you knew what was happening 20 minutes ago.
That's a hell of a story. I mean, it's exciting, but at the same time, it's not great for her, right?
Look, there is a particular there's this 10% of an urge that says to me, oh, let me carry on with this. Let me see how much of a mess it can become. Like, what if I rock up with short shorts at my, you know, quote-unquote friend's house, this girl?
Yeah, no.
And then the husband is there. Then I go, oh, hey there, Joe. Yeah. Want to give it a go? I could be like a homewrecker.
Please, let's not have any dramas here, please. You know what to do. Stay away.
Oh, God, you know, it would be so exciting.
Dangerous.
I don't know. I think...
I did get her number. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, no. So there's a possibility. Shit. It's a mess.
No, I wouldn't do it, but it's just interesting that I'm now caught in this web unnecessarily.
Well, when you said that you had a story from the weekend, I thought you were going to tell us about how you were delayed at the airport and you got drunk in the slow lounge and then hopped on the plane after you'd had a few drinks.
Oh, no. Another awkward story from
Go on.
Here.
We got two from you this morning and none from Leanne yet. This is a very busy morning.
Have you ever had those realizations that you're way drunker than you realize you are? And that's what happened to me over the weekend. I was meant to fly out at 6 p.m. on Saturday. And I'd gotten to the airport and I was all checked in. And then they tell us, oh, sorry, no, now we'll be leaving at 7 something p.m. So I thought, oh, this is a bit of an inconvenience. But in any case,
when
I
that
was
happened.
Sitting at the airport. It is really annoying. Yeah. But at that time, you know, I was sitting in the lounge and, you know, my phone was charging. So I thought, oh, I'll just get a drink. And I had my laptop with me. So I really was preoccupying my own time. I was fine. But then 7 something p.m. turns into like 8. And then 8 turns into 8:30. And then 8:30 turns into 8:45. And I'm thinking, this is really escalating. We finally leave at about 9, but throughout all of this time, I don't realize that I myself was just getting up every so often and going to the bar and getting a drink and going to the bar again and getting a drink and then again. And it hit me when I got to the plane and we were mid-air. Then I needed to pee. I go into the loo. And then I realized, see, it's easily been about 5+ minutes that you've been in here, either talking to yourself, you're having those, oh, deep philosophical conversations of the meaning of my life.
Oh, my God.
Then I was singing to myself. Then I took horrible, awkward videos, so I had to share them with people.
No,
I thought, oh, you are so blasted.
Oh, man.
Oh, my Lord. What were the people sitting next to you thinking?
Who knows what the people were thinking that I left for so long? But thank goodness, as soon as I landed, I even actually had to ask my Uber driver to come into the airport to pick me up. I was like, sir, please, like, right now I need you here to help me with my suitcase and whatnot. He was a champ and very
nice. So you were a bit of a mess then when you landed.
He's like, did you drink more on the plane?
Is that one of those?
No.
Is that one of those situations where when you got home, you were already starting to get to like sleepy drunk? So you basically got to your house and then you didn't even unpack your bag. You kind of wheeled it in and then you fell into your bed and you just went to sleep in the clothes that you were wearing.
Oh, usually I don't even sleep. I'm not a person who likes to sleep in an Uber because the killer.
Yes, of course.
But by the time I was already in the Uber, I thought, well, you know, Jesus take the wheel and let the killer do what he has to do. I was passed out in the Uber as well.
Oh, man. Sounds messy.
Yeah. Well, it was a good weekend, though.
Good for you. We need to have this fun in our lives, don't we?
Yeah.
I think that's hilarious. That's so funny.
Yeah, we need something to hang on to these days.
Yeah.
The small things, you know, little exciting things.
So apparently, this is an interesting point by Winsterian Pikachu. I love that name, by the way. The altitude also adds to the effect of alcohol. Never drink before or on a plane. It is a trap. That's interesting. I've heard that before, but I don't really know much more than what Winsterian Pikachu is saying here. So I think that's interesting. And Tracy has this to say. She says, that guy who was hitting on you in CS case would be, I like a guy in a short and a long jacket. I'm not sure what she means exactly. But this
I don't know about the
COVID solution says, I'd like to talk about Johann Rupert's ANC leadership reshuffle and his threats to not pay Cyril his salary if he doesn't do his job. Well, that was a story by IOL, which we know is really just a fake news organization. I mean, IOL, Independent Online, the various publications that it owns, Iqbal Serve, we know that they're very much in the pocket of the radical economic transformation wing of the ANC. So that, I think this is a disinformation campaign because there have been outright denials by Rupert that he's got anything to do with any of this. And the whole story is based on alleged and supposed things that have been said to a journalist who's not particularly connected. So a lot of people are saying, well, this is just IOL doing, you know, propaganda work, basically being stenographers. for the ANC and a particular faction of the ANC. So I'm not sure I would give that too much credence. I actually read the Sunday Times yesterday just to see what's going on in newspapers. I haven't picked up a newspaper for ages, but I was at the shops. I had to go and buy some like milk and stuff. So I picked up a Sunday Times just to see what was going on over there. And really, you're not missing much if you're not picking up the papers. It's pretty dead. You get more information, you get better information in different places. It used to be that newspapers were your best possible place to check in. And the Sunday Times is still better than anything independent online brings out. But when I see IOL as the source of a story, I treat it with 50-50 legitimacy. And I think that that's probably a safe way to go. We know that particularly when it comes to reporting on ANC matters, the IOL group is really not to be trusted. So that's all I would say there, COVID Solutions. I wouldn't give it too much serious consideration. We've got to get to the headlines for this morning, so let's do that quickly, and we'll come up with all the rest in a few minutes. We've also got plenty of other good stuff heading our way, and then a guest joining us a little bit later, the founder of No One Left Behind, which is probably something we should be thinking about post-pandemic. All this talk of a third wave, and all the experts are saying there's no such thing. It's almost like there are people in society who want there to be a third wave. You know, they want there to be something to panic about. And I'm a little bit concerned that some people are suffering from a Stockholm syndrome where they need an existential threat to keep on being afraid, which is kind of their default setting now. And I don't think that that's I don't think that's a healthy place to be, psychologically at very least. So let's look at some of the headlines that are coming up in the news at the moment. The first one is from ENCA. Dozens killed in Mozambique. And Sia, you had some paranoia and some anxiety about this over the weekend. I mean, this is really close by, and there are South Africans involved, apparently. Dozens of people killed in a coordinated jihadist attack in northern Mozambique's Palma town, the government said on Sunday, 4 days after the raid was launched and forced the evacuation of thousands of survivors to safety in the provincial capital of Pemba. Seven people were killed in an ambush during an operation to evacuate them from a hotel where they had sought refuge, it said. Last Wednesday, a group of terrorists sneaked into Palma and launched actions that resulted in the cowardly murder of dozens of defenseless people. That's what the spokesperson for the Ministry of Defense in Mozambique said at a news conference. Foreigners were among those caught in the violence, but the government did not say how many foreign nationals were killed. So far, one South African is known to have died during the attack. His family confirmed that to AFP. Unbelievable, right? This is right next door. This is a country that directly borders on us. And I remember when we were talking about Islamist insurgents in, first of all, Somalia, then we were talking about it in Sudan, then we were talking about it in Ethiopia, then we were talking about it in Kenya with that mall attack, then we were talking about it in Tanzania. And as you come lower and lower down, you get closer and closer to us. And for the last few months, we have brought this up with JJ Cornish. We discussed it with him in the African Analysis segment of the show once. It's right next door. It's on our doorstep now.
It is so scary.
We've been close to it before with the bombing of Planet Hollywood in Cape Town years and years ago. But there's been nothing since then. So this is very scary.
Well, that you could call that some kind of Islamist attack, but it certainly wasn't related to the efforts of Boko Haram on this side. Sorry, Boko Haram, Al Shabaab is on the East Coast, so that's who we're talking about. But really, in this case, it's the whole Islamic side of this, and you know, I'm not the biggest fan of religious jihad. I mean, who is? Except for the jihadists themselves. But the fact is that in this case, really religion is just a shield being used for a criminal organization. These are criminals who are murdering, extorting, and enslaving people and taking their stuff so that they can run a criminal operation. And Islam is just the excuse for it. I don't believe that Islam is necessarily the greater part of why they're doing this. It just happens to be the rallying call around which they can recruit people and around which they can justify, because people are much more careful with religion than they are with outright crime. So I think in this case it's being used. I really do.
I realize that it is a little selfish to only really be hung up on your emotions around something like this because it's happening so close, but it's somewhat human nature that when it pertains to you, when it's close to you, you really care. But man, I think we're all slightly desensitized every now and then with stories like this, because unfortunately they happen so often. But think about what all of this means. This is Mozambique, our neighbor. When you hear that hundreds of people are fleeing, even if it's 200, to me it's 200 too many. These are people who were, and I'm sure if we haven't, we know people in our circle who go to Mozambique, who go to a resort, and it's all good and well, and then they have to run. How can you imagine having to literally start running, or then some people were interrupted and caught in convoys as they were fleeing? How backward and far-fetched does this seem? It seems like a movie plot to me.
It sounds like it's something from where the orcs are coming in Lord of the Rings, and people have to abandon the city and run across the river. You know,
it's crass, I know, to look at the details like this, but the South African who died had to hide in a bush with his son.
Right.
And actually, at that point, he was already dead, but the son had to keep the corpse of his body, of his father's body, in the bush overnight, just for dignity of keeping onto his body, and then had to flee in the morning when it was safe. I can't even imagine that, and it's happening a few hours or a couple of kilometers away from us. I think this is crazy.
No, it's very
scary. Now the South African family who's affected by this is calling on the Mozambican authorities to really have a safer and more stronger army. But the fact that this is still happening is out of my mind.
There've been calls by South Africans to say, shouldn't we be sending troops there? But I'm just concerned, as is the former editor of the Sunday Times. His name's just eluded me, but I'll get to it in a second. He was just saying, if we do send our army, are we sure that they're not going to make it worse because they're so useless? You know, if we send our army, it's possibly going to be even more embarrassing for us. And then those guys will know, oh, well, South Africa's a good target because they've got a crap army. Maybe better we just shut up and mind our own business. I don't know. I'm not in charge, thank goodness. Thank goodness for all of us. It appears that the ANC's National Executive Committee meeting that was set to resolve the impasse over the future of the Security General, Secretary General, Ace Magashule, has failed to reach a decision. Of course they have, because they are a party that's being torn apart. They're at the end of their life cycle, and the ANC is absolutely in decline. It's understood attempts to give those affected 7 days to step aside or face suspensions were met with resistance from some in the virtual meeting. The ANC-NEC, which is the party's highest decision-making body in between conferences, held an ordinary meeting, dealt with burning issues, though, including the COVID-19 vaccine rollout plan, which is really lackluster, and local government elections. But the most of the discussions focused on issues affecting the ANC themselves. No surprise there. And they were trying to figure out what they should do with Ace Magashule. And, of course, they can't, because half of the people are on Ace's side and half of the people are on Cyril's side. So it's a disaster. Top officials even stepped out of the gathering to hold their own meeting, requesting 14 days to consult, which was rejected by some. It's unreal. We don't know what's going to happen here, but I do think it's going to result in the complete breakdown of ANC unity, and they'll eventually split into two parties. That's what the smart money is on at the moment. So let's see what happens. I mean, I'm not going to cry when the ANC splits up. I'm not going to say, oh, this is terrible news. It could be the best thing for South Africa. In fact, we should all be hoping for that if you want anything but a banana republic. And in Johannesburg, the South African Council of Churches have urged congregants to avoid social gatherings ahead of the Easter period. Easter, of course, for Christians is probably, in some cases, more important than Christmas. And people are worried about particularly those very big gatherings in Maria, the ZCC church. And they say,
I found out yesterday that the ZCC members have the special funeral insurance.
Oh, right.
Because their risk of dying at that time of the year is so much higher.
Oh, really?
What?
Yeah.
Huh.
I heard that from my mom's carer yesterday.
Wow. That's very interesting.
She's not a Zionist, but she knows of this fact.
Mm.
Huh.
Well, they want to keep churches open over the religious holidays. So they're doing what Joe Biden did with the border. They're saying, we do want you to come, but don't all come at once. You know what I mean? They're kind of saying two things, but they seem to be cognitive. There seems to be cognitive dissonance going on. So they're saying they want the churches to be open, but please don't all come, which is strange because how do you decide which people must stay at home and which ones must go?
Do you have like hourly sermons or something?
I don't know. But they're saying that the president has requested places of worship be reopened to a 50% capacity. Worshippers come from all around. We've said that this time nobody must travel to a central church. It must be wherever you are, which, again, sounds bizarre. Why don't they just say, we don't want you to go to Maria for the ZCC gathering because it's too many people? I suppose it'll sound like they're victimizing those people, right?
Mm.
There's been a massive fire in Indonesia at an oil refinery. It broke out at the Balongan refinery, which is run by state oil firm Pertamina, at midnight on Monday. So that was last night. 5 people are injured. It's expected to increase. Around 950 residents have been evacuated to safety. And it looks from the pictures like a really frightening incident. TV footage and video on social media showed the fire raging on Monday morning, with a plume of smoke rising high above the refinery located in West Java province. And it looks like it's a hell of a disaster. So unfortunately for the people of Indonesia, waking up with fire and smoke and a very ugly situation there. And in Brisbane, in Australia, they've shut down the Hull City over 7 cases of COVID. Yep, you just heard that right. Australia and New Zealand had very strict lockdowns and quarantine period for anyone coming in and all that kind of thing. And they've more or less kept it under control by being unbelievably draconian. The problem is that when you're draconian, some things will slip through the cracks because you can't keep track of every single person. And there are over 2 million residents of Brisbane. Those 2 million people are now going to be completely shut down. That means they can't do or go anywhere, can't do anything, go anywhere. And that is because they found 7 new cases. So, you know,
it's such a contrast to what Australia really is as an island full of wild creatures and dangerous creatures.
Well, no.
You know, where things literally run wild.
Yeah, look.
And then this huge contrast of trying to control absolutely everything.
They've decided that they are going to lock down completely. Health officials are yet to determine how the virus leaked into the community. They say it's potentially linked to a hospital doctor who was infectious 2 weeks ago. Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk, that's her real name, said the discovery of 4 more local cases reported on Monday shows there was more community transmission. And there was a story in the news, I haven't got the source with me at the moment, that apparently New Zealand is possibly dealing with having their hospitals overrun at the moment too, from an Australian news site. But I'm not going to read that story out until I've actually got the article in front of me. So I'll try and find that in the next while. But, you know, you can't avoid this thing. It's how viruses work.
Yeah.
You know? And Tracy says, Australia's motto is, you can see a dangerous animal, but you can't see a virus. I still love the place. Can't wait for the next visit. All right. Very good. That's the news. Those are the only headlines that I thought would matter to you this morning. So if you needed to know what was going on, that's it.
I was waiting for a baboon story.
Well, yeah, we're waiting for that from you.
Yeah, you tell us the baboon story. I don't know much about this.
So this baboon, which is purported to have come from the cradle area, has left. What happens is these older baboons, males, tend to leave the troop at a certain point because it's just a natural thing for them to do to avoid inbreeding. So they go and try and find another troop to join. And this is why he started this long, auspicious journey of going off to start his own line and his own brood.
Wow. Baboons care about incest.
Yes, baboons care about incest. So he started making his way all down the west of Johannesburg, eventually coming into West Dean and Linden. And it was yesterday morning where we got the alert that he was really close to my suburb, and he was moving at such a rapid pace, and basically like
maybe he caught an Uber.
No, like a criminal, he ran between properties, over walls and into gardens. Excuse me. And people had to put their dogs away, because if a dog tries to attack him, just like any human, he's going to retaliate and try and protect himself and attack the animal. So everyone was locking away their animals. And I then got into the car because I was going to see my parents, and found myself in the suburb that he was in. And there was a bit of excitement. You know, I was at Checkers. There were a couple of people saying they'd seen him just down the road. And then I drove from there to my mom's. And almost at the same speed, my mom is in Parktown North. He was in Parktown North.
So he moves.
That's how fast he was traveling.
Maybe he's like catching a lift on the back of a bucky and nobody knows. Like hopping on there and, you know.
So there were loads of videos going around of people filming him in their gardens and climbing. How he didn't get shot by electric fences, I don't know.
Yeah.
Goodness.
And the whole thing is, you know, there were rescue and rehabilitation and wildlife people who were on this and tracking him. But the thing is, you can't dart a baboon just anyway, because what happens is they get a fright from the dart and they run, usually forward and then up a tree. Okay. And by the time the dart takes effect, they'll fall out of the tree, most likely to their death.
Well,
so they actually have to be in an enclosed area where there's kind of only one exit, which obviously puts the person who's doing the shooting in huge danger as well. I checked last night before I went to bed to see if he was still going, and apparently he was, and I don't see any new news this morning. There he is.
I was looking at guns on Tuesday last week. I'd be happy to help.
No, darting, not guns.
Imagine being one of the first people who sees this baboon. I'm sure you blink twice and thrice and you think, did I see correctly?
Correct.
And apparently he is enormous. Hmm. If you see him, you know, difficult to tell his size looking at all the videos I've seen.
Listen, have you ever seen have you ever seen a baboon yawn and you see the size of those teeth? That's not to be messed with. It's really not to be messed with. Those are not playthings. They know they're dangerous. They're very dangerous animals.
It was quite funny. I was in my parents' garden, and I overheard the neighbors. There were two teenage girls who were very excited because they had spotted it, and they had taken a video, and the one was saying, "Oh, it's already got 7 views. I'm so excited."
So tell me quickly, because you've also got a list of like the most dangerous cities in the world, and it's not because of baboons, but this is worth spending a bit of time talking about. There are 6 South African cities that make up the top 20 in the most dangerous cities in the world list, and Leanne has all of that information. So should we be celebrating that we have 6 out of the top 20? I mean, this is not something to be proud of, right?
Jeez, I'm surprised it's that much.
6 of our cities.
So let's take into consideration the source of this, okay? It's on the southafrican.com, which I find quite credible. But this is according to user-generated data, and it doesn't say much more than that. So, you know, was it mainly South Africans who were polled, or, you know, I don't know.
The South African.com was started by people who are expats who live in London. It's a company that's registered in London. So
yeah.
I would say that their main audience is still probably expatriate South Africans who want to think that it's more dangerous than it is because it justifies their reason for leaving. That's all I'm going to say.
Exactly. So this is why I'm mentioning that, because how is this poll or research done? So in first place is Caracas in Venezuela.
Right.
They've worked out something called a crime index and then something called a safety index.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at the crime index, that comes up at 84.6. The second one is in Papua New Guinea. Third is Pretoria. Fourth, Durban. Fifth, Johannesburg.
Hold on a second. You're telling me that Pretoria is more dangerous than Johannesburg?
This is also, I was very surprised.
How is that possible?
Exactly.
And both of those are more dangerous than Cape Town?
Cape Town's not even in the top 10.
But Cape Town has got Cape Town has got gang violence like Pretoria and Joburg do not have. Right.
Exactly.
And while Joburg is much bigger and probably has more crime generally, those are not all as violent as the crimes that are reported in Cape Town. In fact, there was a list that was brought out just at the beginning of this year, which put Cape Town way ahead of Johannesburg in terms of crime. So I don't know that this thing sounds very credible.
This is what's concerning me, is that this is going around and people are, you know, taking it seriously. Look, we know, I mean, and then it's got Pietermaritzburg on the list there as well, in the top 10.
Oh,
so Cape Town doesn't even feature there.
So
what does Pietermaritzburg have?
Sorry, you guys, I lost you there for a second.
No. This is nonsense. Carry on. I'm not believing this. Pietermaritzburg is more dangerous than Cape Town. Do me a favor. Really?
I mean, we know that. If you look at countries in the world on, you know, believable and properly researched articles, will tell you that South Africa is quite a way up there. But I'm a bit concerned about this, considering that people are going to take this story that seriously.
Yeah. Listen, I don't think we're more dangerous than Venezuela or than Afghanistan or than Baghdad. I mean, Baghdad's got to be more dangerous than Pretoria, for heaven's sake. Surely. It's not even on the list. I would say even...
It reminds
me
of...
some American cities that are more dangerous than ours at the moment. I mean, in Chicago, they've got gang shootings every weekend. And just because they don't make a fuss of it in the media doesn't mean that it's not happening.
It reminds me of a documentary I watched... made by the UK, people in the UK, but it was around Cape Town hospitals.
Yeah.
Now we know the realities of violence and, you know, crime in this country, but I watched that documentary. It was by Reggie Yates, and he does a lot of stuff for the BBC, and I find him very interesting. But watching that, I thought, come on, this is way too sensational. This is just too, they were hamming things up. This is trying to be almost voyeuristic to give people this thrill of, oh my gosh, really, Africa's insane. The first scene in this documentary was Reggie walking into a Cape Town hospital at around midnight, and he's following doctors on call, wanting to figure out, you know, what are some of the reasons people are in ER that evening. And the doctor says, oh, well, I've just come out of dealing with someone who's had to have their leg amputated. And he goes, leg amputated? He goes, uh-huh. And they bring up this amputated leg. Like, see, this is the violence. Oh, wow. This is what people have to deal with on an average basis. Come on. This is not what we should be preaching about this country. We do not want to see a sore, like, a leg that has been sawed off.
I'm not going to make excuses for the fact that we have huge and rampant and out of control crime. We all know about that already. And maybe I'm just taking it for granted that people in this country are used to it. Maybe I'm also, you know, there's some level of kind of underlying anxiety in all of us, and we've just accepted that's how people live. But I do think, you know, as LB says, comparing us to Baghdad is not a good look. I agree. But there are certainly grades of danger, and I don't know that Pretoria or Pietermaritzburg are more dangerous than Cape Town. I can't somehow see that being true. I think it's BS, and Kyle agrees with me. Don't strip Cape Town of our capital, our crime capital crown. It's so sad, but it's true. I don't know. Mary says, I mean, one of the reasons that we should be aware of the fact that immigration is going the way that it is, and it is. It's crazy. The number of people who are leaving South Africa, and the ones who can afford to leave South Africa is growing. It's not going down. So people wouldn't leave if South Africa was safe and if we had a reasonable economy and healthcare was good. So those are things to consider. And Mary, I don't by any means disregard what you're saying as being nonsense. I think it's very, very valid. But when you're going to rank cities in the world, don't come up with a list that's clearly and patently bizarre. It makes you
It's almost as if, like you say, the readers are expats.
Yeah.
And it's almost as if the question might have been put out there, which city do you think is the most dangerous in the world?
Right.
And wherever they lived, they've listed. Because for Pretoria and Pietermaritzburg to come up in there and not Cape Town, it's just too specific and odd.
It's very strange. I wanted to get into something that we'll probably talk about in the next hour, but I've suddenly realized, like, I haven't been clothes shopping, and, you know, I haven't been to a mall or anything to look for basic stuff that I would have been buying 2-3 times a year, you know, new T-shirts, new kind of tops, and winter's coming. I haven't bought clothes since probably before lockdown.
So, it's so weird because I dreamt last night that I was shopping for clothes and it was so much fun.
Oh.
But I did bump into Zoraida Jardine in my dream.
Right.
In the shopping mall.
what a strange thing to dream about.
She was carrying a dress that was still on the hanger that she had just bought from one of the boutique stores that I knew I would never go into because I wouldn't be able to afford the dresses. You know, I was chatting to her about the dress, and I looked at it, and I saw the price tag, and it was 34,999 rand.
Oh my God! Imagine buying a dress for that. Okay. That's crazy.
I said to her, "You know, is this sponsored? You know, have they given this to you?
Right?
Because you know, you are who you are." She said, "No, I just loved it, so I bought it with my own money."
Well,
and I had like pick and pay clothing
When last did you go and buy clothes? Because honestly, I haven't been to buy clothes for maybe a year, maybe even a year and a half. I mean, I can honestly not tell you the last time I went and bought. And I'm talking about basic stuff, which means like there's nothing new in my cupboards for over a year. Not that that should be so strange. I mean, I've got enough clothes to not be running out. But I suddenly thought the other day, really. You know, you should maybe consider buying some winter stuff. It's going to be coming quicker than we think.
Yeah. It shows you how we do dress for other people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, it's interesting.
How about you, Sia?
Oh, no. I still need it. I still need it as a bit of a pick-me-up, as just, I'm sorry to say this as well, just to amuse myself every now and then. Either online, I thought.
Oh, so you've been buying stuff online.
Still don't have their dressing rooms open would annoy me, but nope, hasn't. So I will gladly walk in there, buy some stuff, and come back and return it if it's an issue.
So I mean, Sia, you buy clothes.
Thank you,
you buy. Oh, sorry, You buy. Sorry, I was talking nonsense to myself there. So you buy clothes online?
Yeah.
You're not worried that when you get them, they're going to be wrong and they're going to fit badly? Or, I mean, I would never buy pants or a shirt online. I'd be too scared that they'd be the wrong size.
I was also distrusting, but now I've done it so many times. I'm used to it. I'm really used to it. Oh, my gosh, I need it now. It's sad if I don't. It's such a stereotype.
There is no way in hell I would be able to buy stuff online.
I'd be too nervous.
Unless there was a certain style of something called the Jessica or the Veronica, and I knew the style of the dress.
Well, I mean,
that I had one already, and then I could buy another.
You can really waste a lot of money if you go into these online stores and you buy them, especially if it's stuff that, you know, and they advertise it and it's someone who looks really good in a pair of pants, for example. And then when you get them, they just really don't suit you at all, and you have to send them back, and it's a real pain. I don't know.
I find our retailers and platforms are really consumer focused, and they're trying to make the whole experience as simple as possible.
Right.
You know, a lot of these places have free return situations, or they can come back and collect it again,
right,
and swap it for something else. I really haven't faced any sort of an issue.
Well, I mean, this is Jared's point. He says he spent more on clothes online since last March than he would in the shops in a normal year. So there are a lot of people who are doing this. Steph says, I shop online these days. It's the best. No queues. Mm-hmm. Winnie says the prices are crazy. You see this because I'm a little out of the loop. Carla says online purchases usually have a free and simple return, so there's no risk. Yeah, but then you have to, oh, yay, yay. I don't know. I mean, this is crazy. Annette says, I buy most.
You're just thinking of the admin.
Yeah, I mean, where do you even send it? Do you drop them off at a collection point, like with Take a Lot, or what's the story? Do you have to take them to a place? Then it seems like a hell of a schlep.
I think they collect them from you.
Really? Okay, maybe it's good.
Yeah.
Annette says, I buy most of my clothes online. I'm seldom disappointed, as long as you know your site. You're good. Oh, your size, sorry.
Your size.
Yeah. Size, yeah.
I pretty much only shop online for clothes. Works perfectly 90% of the time, says Carl. This is so, okay, I'm learning things here. So in other words, I don't even have to go to the shops. I can buy stuff online. But then tell me which places are the best to buy from, because I wouldn't even know where to start. Like which sites do I go to? I'm really not on top of this at all. And I'm embarrassed to admit that this is not something that I've done properly before. All right, cool. We've got to get to our 7 o'clock break. We will be back in a moment. CliffCentral.com. Give us your comments. Let us know what's on your mind. The number is 079-0797482090. If you want to get hold of us, let us know what's going on with you and what you want to talk about. And in the next hour, we will be back with we've got a special guest joining us in a little while on something that I think will probably interest quite a lot of us. An inspiring story to get your week off to a good start. And because it's Monday and it's a short week, we have lots to look forward to. So stick around. CliffCentral.com.